This is The Takeaway, and it's Friday. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And what happened this week? What happened this week? I tweeted that only in America do you have in the same week a network anchor who lied and tells America he wants to be trusted, a woman who's white who tells America she wants to be considered black, and a white man with a gun who kills 9 black people in a church in Charleston and says to police he wants to start a race war. 1 week. But is it one America? Trust, race, and violence. All three of those. That's the big construct right there in one crazy, only in America kind of biblical parable. What does it mean? Is it terrorism in Charleston, people argue? No. Yes, of course it is. And the attacks on blacks that have happened throughout history, African Americans under siege, those were terrorism. Is it racial? Of course it is. Confederate flag flying over the State House in South Carolina? Hello? All-black church? Hello? White guy with a gun who wears patches from white-ruled Rhodesia that were made long before he was born? Hello? This year, gun violence, I love this statistic, is poised to surpass car deaths in America. Have you heard about that? No, of course you haven't. Race is dominating the conversation in our cities right now, cities filled with tension between African-Americans and police. Can we trust each other in America? Huh? That's the tough one. Forget Al-Qaeda. Forget ISIS. We're doing this to ourselves. Can we trust ourselves to get this right anytime soon?
We gather to offer our condolences and to pray with and for the families of the friends, colleagues, and family members killed in a senseless, tragic episode of domestic terrorism.
They're working on trust there in Charleston. That's the Reverend Charles Watkins speaking to the people of Charleston and speaking for them at one of the many prayer vigils and memorial services in town. In whispered voices, these people move forward from the shooting on Wednesday night of 9 people, including the pastor at a service at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston. How is the community doing? Bakari Sellers is a former South Carolina state representative. He knows many of the dead. And told us today in Charleston there are no ambiguities right now. And trust, he says he can see it, barely.
As you saw a community acknowledge what this was, it was a hate crime, it was an assault against individuals simply because of the color of their skin. And then they put together a plan to apprehend this individual in a very short amount of time. You have to take a step back and you have to acknowledge that this type of callous hatred, this type of racism, this type of domestic terrorism was handled in a fashion that must be applauded.
Positive. That's Bakari Sellers, former South Carolina state representative. He's feeling positive today, given everything that's going on. But what about race and violence and the pockets where shooter suspect Dylan Roth, now charged with 9 counts of murder, learned his hate? What about that? Where are those pockets? Who's watching those pockets? Can they even be watched until someone with a gun actually walks into the church and does what we saw? Joining me now with more is Heidi Byruck, who's head of the Intelligence Project at the Southern Poverty Law Center. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Heidi.
Thanks for having me.
So Heidi, how do you, this quote has been haunting me all day, and apparently one of the friends of Dylan Roth said, oh yeah, sure, he was talking about violence and telling all these horrible racial jokes and using the N-word all the time, but I just thought he was kidding, that somehow that's normal. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do something. How do you do if you see something, say something in a place like that where it's normal to think that way? It must complicate your job.
Well, it's actually a little frightening, right, for someone to think that that kind of stuff would be normal, right? I'm not sure how that could be the case. And it's clear that from those comments that there were indications that this guy was going to do something violent at some point anyways. It's unfortunate no one spoke up. In fact, we found in a lot of cases with lone wolf actors like this, I mean, if it turns out he did this by himself, that they do actually broadcast whatever, you know, the object of their ire is, whatever their views are, and the idea that they're going to do something about it. People do need to speak up.
But let's not talk down to our presumptions about a culture of, you know, trailer people or people living in cabins out in the woods somewhere. I mean, how do these two communities live so close together and the intersections, as we saw on Wednesday night, become so bloody and there's no advance warning?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it happens more than you would think. And you're right to make the point about not talking down. But at this point in time, you can live anywhere and with a keyboard, immerse yourself in the world of violent white supremacy, right? We don't know if Mr. Roth did or didn't do that, but it sure sounds like from the words that he spoke in that church that he had been spending a lot of time on sites like Stormfront.org or the Council of Conservative Citizens. These are big white supremacist outfits that talk about nothing except the fact that white people are being genocided by blacks. It's an outrageous notion, but that's the kind of propaganda that's being pumped out there. It doesn't matter where you are, you know, very quickly you can be in that world.
Now, the NSA, you know, we're led to believe is watching all of the conversations of people all over the world, you know, whenever Al-Qaeda comes up or jihad comes up. Do you have any sense that you are joined by investigators in the federal government in watching for people who are doing exactly as you say, looking at inflammatory websites about white supremacy and getting all stirred up by this idea that African-Americans are taking over?
Well, I don't think the federal government has done their job very well on this front. A few years ago, they shut down the Department of Homeland Security's unit that was dedicated to right-wing extremism. They did that under a firestorm of complaints from the right. The FBI can only look at this stuff if they have a criminal predicate. So the fact of the matter is that we have basically dens of lone wolves on these big white supremacist hate sites, and they're going unmonitored while at the same time the federal government is expending extreme resources to battle Islamic extremism. Now, you know, I'm not against battling Islamic extremism, but we've got our own domestic terrorism problem here in the U.S., and it involves whites, mostly white males, and it deserves as much attention as the other threats do.
And can you give me a sense of the numbers I was searching and trying to find? You know, since 9/11, it's something like 8 foreign attacks versus more than 300 a year of domestic attacks of one kind or another. But it was hard for me to categorize. You know this stuff back and forwards. Help me out here.
Yeah, the numbers are basically along the lines of what you said. A handful of jihadi attacks domestically, right, in the United States, and dozens and dozens and dozens of right-wing inspired, attacks. In fact, in a report that we put out in February on lone wolf violence, we found that there has been an attempted plot or a carried out one by someone influenced either by white supremacist or radical anti-government beliefs every 34 days for the last 5 years. And I think most people don't really realize that this is going on. They don't understand that we have a domestic terrorism problem that's coming from white guys, basically, you know, influenced by extremist ideas. That is very, very serious, and that is unfortunate, and we just learned that lesson again in Charleston the other day.
All right, help me out with two things here before we go. Number one, I'm going to get emails for the rest of the day talking about how I'm pushing my liberal agenda and that don't I understand that the Southern Poverty Law Center comes on radio programs like this so they can raise money by screaming about white males doing this kind of violence. What's your response?
Look, the fact of the matter is that is who are committing these acts of violence. I mean, you just look at the list of attacks coming from people who are either driven by hate ideas or radical anti-government beliefs, and the evidence stands for itself. Most of the terrorism that we've experienced domestically in the last couple, three decades has come from the extreme fringes of the right wing. Of course, that wasn't true in the 1960s when we had a lot of left wing violence. But those are just facts. And, you know, if the complaint is that we're making this up, I just say, look at the numbers.
All right. So how do we create a culture of vigilance about this where maybe we're more candid about race? I mean, I don't know. Maybe we watch guns more. And if I say the word gun, I'm going to get other kinds of emails that you can only imagine. How can we create vigilance about this that is on the order of utility as if you see something, say something? Do you have any insights there from all the work you've done?
Well, I think it's going to have to start with federal law enforcement. I mean, that's the appropriate body to be worrying about this. I mean, they are the ones who are supposed to be protecting us from this kind of stuff. So that's where it's got to start. Department of Homeland Security needs to do its job better. I will say this, Eric Holder did revive a task force of U.S. attorneys to deal with domestic terrorism. They've met three times since last June. That's a very good start. That task force was put into place after McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City bombing. Obviously, he was influenced by hate ideas and anti-government ideas. And the last time it had met until Holder revived it, what it was supposed to meet was the day of the 9/11 attack. So I consider that a positive thing on this front.
Heidi, I asked a black legislator earlier today that if now a white person goes into a black church on Sunday, are all the blacks going to be afraid? And are all the African Americans going to be concerned about that? And he said, absolutely not. I think we should try that this weekend. Heidi, thanks so much.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Heidi Beirich, head of the Intelligence Project at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And trust, that's the word.